We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Feel good right now. I don't know about you. I feel as good song, good music, good news, good dogs running around. I just feel pretty good right now.
The boys have taken their usual role. The pugs, Hank and Harry, have made their way downstairs. They're working dogs. They understand we got a show to do here. And yeah, they want everyone to feel good right now. Why shouldn't we? We're coasting off the match. We're getting some news about various leagues starting to push forward here. We're allowed to feel good.
Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. So you know what happens, right? We're going to feel good. We're going to talk about this stuff for a while, and then in a few minutes we're going to be joined by someone who's just going to punch us in the face with bad news, and that'll be Major League Baseball Insider Jeff Passan.
No, you know what? Jeff Passan is Jeff.
And it's not Jeff's fault. I want to be clear.
I was going to say, I saw Jeff Passan, obviously renowned for his Elmo impersonation. I saw him and Tony Collins doing Baby Shark on SportsCenter the other day. Jeff Passan is a purveyor of joy. He just happens to, for Major League Baseball's purposes, represent our succometer, just trying to make sure we understand how much things do or don't suck in the world of Major League Baseball and what's going on right now.
100%.
He got a job to do.
He's doing it, and we respect that. I mean, he's doing what he has to do, and we understand that. So we will hear from Jeff in just a few minutes. But you heard there the intro, a lot of people very optimistic about the NBA actually playing this season, and it looks like it's going to be in some way, shape, or form done in Disney World, where there are easier restrictions, for lack of a better term, which is sort of a contradictory term, but it's easier to restrict people's movement in and around than it would be, say, in Las Vegas, is what I'm getting at.
Exactly. So all roads seem to be pointing to that. And now all roads seem to be for pointing towards the players starting to ask for some more concrete answers on this stuff. We got word from the NBA PA Executive Director Michelle Roberts this morning.
Yeah, you can see it on ESPN.com. Ramona Shelburne has put a story out there. But basically, this is the gist of it. In team-by-team virtual calls with players this week, NBA PA Executive Director Michelle Roberts said, and this is the big part, the overwhelming sentiment has been that, quote, they really want to play and resume the 2019-2020 NBA season, most likely in late July at Disney's ESPN's Wide World of Sports in Orlando, Florida. Roberts went on to say, it's time. It's time. It's been 2.5 months of what if. My players need some level of uncertainty. I think everybody does. And we've heard some people come out there and have something. James Harden has said, I'm not sure if I'm going to do this. And, you know, Steph Curry said he wants to play, but he wants to make sure there are a lot of parameters in place. But the bottom line in talking to the person whose job it is to relate the wishes of the players, and that's Michelle Roberts, it seems like the overwhelming majority are, let's go. And that's a positive thing.
Well, it's a positive thing, but it's also an interesting thing because we have heard since the beginning of this, Adam Silver on the other side of this, the commissioner of the NBA, saying, we're going to wait. It's been kind of a wait-and-see approach for a while. We saw them essentially take an entire month off in order to plan behind the scenes, and we have lauded them for it. We laud the NBA leadership in general because in a lot of key situations, they've answered the bell. This is going to be a big one, and our own Adrian Wojnarowski said, our ESPN NBA insider who joined Golic and Wingo yesterday, knows Adam Silver is aware this might not be a consensus across the board.
This is where it's going to get more difficult for Adam Silver. This is where people who have lauded how he's handled this throughout, he's going to start making decisions now that are either going to upset people, alienate some groups, make some think, hey, that's not fair to us, that's an advantage to them. And he knows that. And he knows that whether that's a play-in tournament, whether that's how they're going to structure more regular season games and then into the postseason, that's going to really impact the competitive balance of how this plays out.
And Junior, I think you said something really interesting. And by the way, I want to be clear. I think you say a lot of things that are very interesting. But one, we were off air earlier. I thought you said something that was really intriguing about Adam. He has been lauded for, hey, let's stop, let's do this. He's been very progressive. He's listened to players. He's tried to create new things and be ahead of the thing. But I think what happens with how he handles this could be a defining moment for how Adam Silver is going to be perceived in the long term. And that's not something that you can just say, oh, yeah, that's part of the equation. That's a big bleeping deal.
Yeah, this is a guy who, and listen, we all want to be liked, right? And Adam Silver has been overwhelmingly liked by the players, by everyone involved. He's made difficult decisions regarding what happened with Donald Sterling very early on in his tenure that affected the ownership side of things. And he's certainly been a part of a lot of progressive points in time for the players. This is one of those instances where this is going to drastically affect both. How many games you play and who you evolve is going to involve the owners and certain owners and their money potentially coming in, and the health and safety and well-being of a lot of players. If the league comes back and you have a rash of positive tests for a bunch of guys on the team, and God forbid someone gets really, truly sick, it's going to go back to the leadership provided by Adam Silver. And so I think that's why he's been as prudent with this decision as he is, and that's why it hangs so hard right now. But clearly we're seeing everyone even understanding that, as I'm sure Michelle Roberts and others do, because they're one of the leagues that has a good relationship between the players and the commissioner. There's still the sense of, all right, man, at some point, you got to be the one to call it.
Right. And the old line is, uneasy is the head that wears the crown. I mean, it's like Michelle Roberts can say our players are ready and the owners can say we're ready to roll. But at the end of the day, if it all goes sideways, people are going to point to one person, and that's Adam Silver. And I don't think you can just casually have that as part of a conversation. That is going to be, in many ways, a defining moment for him. And so I understand why he's taking it slowly, but there's no way all risk is ever going to be unmitigated, right? There's going to be that risk. The question is, where are the players? And it seems from Michelle Roberts' perspective, they're pretty good with it. Where is Adam on the idea that if it does all go sideways, I'm the one that's probably going to take the hit here?
Well, and you know what? We say that, but then immediately I go, well, this is also a partnership. And it's interesting because we've seen how poorly it worked out for Major League Baseball once this started becoming a public conversation. And you wonder what's had to happen behind closed doors for Michelle Roberts to feel so compelled by her, by the people she represents, to come out and say this.
Yeah.
Because the rebuttal, if I'm the NBA side, is, all right, well, what are you guys willing to do? We've heard so much public conversation from players about, well, are we going to be able to have our families back? Are you willing to, if safety dictates it, not be able to be around your families, not be able to leave this site? All of these things that maybe the commissioner wants to do, but understands, hey, the players have a role in this too, and they have a big voice because this is a partnership.
By the way, we welcome those of you who are now watching Golic and Wingo on ESPN2, who are watching the NC Dinos and the KBO. Just continue to swole daddy everybody. They come up with a 4-2 win today to move to 14-3 on the season. Look, if your mascot is Swole Daddy, it's hard to overcome that, and most of the KBO is figuring that out right now.
I mean, it is just devastating, and the fact that we're used to coming back from the KBO in like the 9 o'clock hour, they are out here just toe-tagging folks. Good Lord.
Listen, the KBO has been a bountiful gift for a lot of reasons that I have truly enjoyed, so we'll continue the coverage of that throughout the season on ESPN2. But we're having this discussion about what goes forward. Again, for those of you that just joined us, Michelle Roberts, in her new column put up by Ramona Shelburne on ESPN.com, who is the NBA PA, the executive director of the Players Association, has basically said, we're ready. Give us some plans. So Adam Silver and company and the league owners are trying to come up with those plans, but it looks like it's going to be in some way, shape, or form that bubble scenario at Disney World.
Yeah, and so they're focusing in on that. We know it was a couple of sites in question, Vegas, Disney. It seems like the wild world of sports is looking more and more like the option, and that's something that the owners and the Board of Governors are going to have to vote on coming up here soon. But then it's the players. It's, what are you willing to do for this time period? And I think we've heard so many playoff scenarios, the play-in tournament idea. I think what's going to end up happening is you've got to, at this point in time, with the information we have, because what we know now ain't what football is going to be allowed to know in August when they have to make a lot tougher decisions, July and August. The NBA has got to work a lot more on the now. And I think in the interest of what we've got now in terms of knowledge about this disease and available testing is going to end up being taking the best 16 teams, playing the playoffs right off the bat, forsaking the last handful of games from the regular season, and having a more strict policy than maybe some will be comfortable with when it comes to the bubble, in favor of saying, We've got to get this played for everyone's best interest. The player's interest, clearly, as echoed by Michelle Roberts, and certainly the owner's side, who understand that what we're doing here is going to matter not only for this year, but for how they go about handling next year as well.
Right. And one of the things that's been pretty much, look, nothing is 100% certain. One of the things that seems pretty obvious in this situation is they're going to relate on a 16-team playoff that might be seeded differently. Now, it's interesting this year because the top 16 teams would, in fact, be 8 from the East and 8 from the West. But basically, they're going to take those top 8 and then reseed them. But if you're the Milwaukee Bucks.
Well, they're not going to. That's something that's been proposed for a while, but that is in no way decided on at this point.
Right, exactly. But you would understand, because for that to happen, you'd have to have, what, 5 owners from the Eastern Conference basically say, yeah, I'm good with that.
You would need, I think, at least 20 owners would have to vote in favor of reseeding the playoffs based on just 1 through 16, regardless of conference in this. The luxury they would have this year is the top 16 teams in the league are the top 8 teams in the West and the top 8 teams in the East. No one in that group right now in the current playoff standings would miss the playoffs because of this change, but you would still, like you were pointing out, have teams that were affected with their seeding, especially out of the Eastern Conference. So would those owners be as willing to vote?
And again, that's many of the things that are being discussed. But right now, it looks like going forward, the plan is to either have some sort of play-in situation with a few regular season games, or just start with the 16 teams in the postseason, which would be 8 from the East and 8 from the West. So we're having real progress on the NBA. And there's Major League Baseball, which is still sort of stuck in this fight over money, among other issues. And for more on that, we are delighted, even though it's, you know, it doesn't seem as optimistic. We are delighted, as always, to talk to our fine Major League Baseball insider, Jeff Passan, the president of the suckometer, for lack of a better term, who put it out there when these negotiations began, there's going to be suckage and then there's going to be compromise. Jeff, thanks for being with us this morning. It feels like we're still stuck in the suckage right now.
Yeah, there's a little suckitude, but less than there has been, certainly. And I think today is going to be the day, or at least that's the expectation, that the long-awaited financial plan from Major League Baseball to the Players Association is actually going to happen. Players Association probably isn't going to like it. They're going to come back with their own, and that's when the compromise is going to happen.
You still feel confident, right?
I do. It's cautious. I've been using the words cautious optimism more over the last 2 months than I've ever used in my life. But I think that it just makes too much sense, especially now with the progress that we've seen with the NBA and the NHL. If they're coming back and baseball's not back in the summer, like, what kind of a look for the sport is that, short and long term?
Jeff, the last time we talked to you, we were coming right off the tremors from that idea of the 50-50 split that was floated out there that was never officially proposed to the players but was sort of hanging out there in the ether and was met with a very strong reaction from players and otherwise. Has there been progress since on an idea of what might realistically be that compromise that you mentioned?
I mean, it may be a slight pay cut. It may be a pay cut plus deferrals. And there's a question of just how intransigent the players are going to be about getting their full salaries. And look, it's understandable why they want them, because these aren't really their full salaries. It's their salaries at 50% if they play half a season. And the compromise guys may end up coming in the number of games played. You know, if they play, as opposed to the 82-game schedule that MLB has wanted, closer to 100 games, and take a slight pay cut off that, they're going to be making at least 50% of their salary at that point, and that may be where this thing ultimately lands.
Jeff Passan with us this morning, our fine Major League Baseball insider. Jeff, you said something not too long ago that you felt like the deal had to be done before the end of May, before the start of June, for this idea of spring training to begin in June and potentially as early as July 4th, regular season baseball games beginning. Do you still feel like that's the parameter in which this needs to happen?
I think if not that, then awfully close. We can't be going into mid-June. Like we have to understand the timing on this, Trey, and the timing on this is understandably sensitive. We have to recognize that there are going to be people coming in from foreign countries, and it's going to take a while to get them home or get them back to the U.S. We have to recognize that there are going to be intake screenings for coronavirus, and those intake screenings are going to take, you know, 72 hours. So that's another 3 days that you have to bake in. There are just a lot of different elements to this that make a deal needing to be done by late May and early June at the absolute latest a necessity if you want to stick to this timeline that you've put out there. And I think it's something that's doable. Granted, putting together an agreement of this magnitude is really difficult regardless of a ticking clock or not. But there is a ticking clock right now, and I think all the parties involved recognize that and have been preparing for that. So can something come together quickly? Absolutely. Something could have come together quickly weeks ago. It didn't, though. And so they are all facing right now, I think, the recognition that they need to do something and there needs to be progress this week if they do want to meet that mid-June spring training.
Talking to Jeff Passan, our ESPN MLB insider with us on Golic and Wingo. Jeff, I think one of the key questions for every sports league, and we know it's been addressed to some extent with the conversation around service time in Major League Baseball, but have they figured out for sure one way or another what they are going to do or what it seems like they're going to do should a player who is otherwise healthy just not be comfortable with coming back and playing?
Well, it depends. You know, in the draft proposal for health and safety regulations that MLB put together, 67 pages, enormously detailed, they talked about high-risk individuals. Now, that's players with medical conditions, that's family members with pre-existing conditions, that's people who have diabetes. Kenley Jansen, for example, had heart surgery. I mean, those are the players who they have essentially exempted. But what's going to happen if there's a player who is relatively generally healthy and he wants to sit out because of fear or concern over the coronavirus? How is that player handled? That is not done yet. And that's something that's going to be discussed this week, Mike, because it's an issue. And if that player wants to sit out, the MLBPA is going to want him to get paid. And they're not going to sit there and say, we're going to just straight up accept the fact that if a player sits out and he doesn't have what the league deems a good reason, that he doesn't get paid for it. So that's something that is definitely going to be one of the big issues this week.
Look, no question about it. And everybody has to come to their own comfortability with this situation based on their own personal surroundings, and we understand that as Jeff Passan is with us. But Jeff, I want to ask you this because we had Tom Glavine on with us last week, and obviously he was a part of the 94-95 strike. And when they came back, he basically said in an article that we posted on ESPN.com, look, no matter what happens, if there's a problem, the players, whether it's right or wrong, fair or unfair, are going to get blamed for this more than the owners. And that's just the way it is. I mean, he's not saying it's right. He's not saying it's wrong. He's just pointing out the reality of the situation. Major league athletes or professional athletes in any level are hard people to sometimes get through to because they are in the peak physical condition of their life. They are making a ton of money. And they believe, for lack of a better term, a lot of times they are bulletproof. And they don't go through a lot of these scenarios. Tom Glavine was one of the best, Hall of Famer, awesome, made a ton of money, understood this. And all of us on the outside can see what he's saying and say, yeah, I get it. But does that resonate with players of today?
Yeah, I think players understand that. And remember, Tom Glavine, Trey, was not only all of those things. He was one of the people at the forefront of the union back in the strike era. So he's somebody who is intimately familiar with these things. And I think players, while they understand that that's the public perception, they don't like it, and they don't have to. They shouldn't. Like, I personally don't get why the public looks at labor as if it has to fall in line and tends to take the side of owners. But that's just a reality of the situation. And that, I wonder, is where the MLBPA has to compromise. If it has to recognize that it has the ability to be cast as the villain in this, almost inadvertently, and has to really tiptoe around these issues so as not to look like it's being greedy, and so as the players aren't the ones who have aspersions cast on them. Are they willing to do that? We're about to find out, and it's going to be a really interesting element of these discussions to see how much MLB pushes its players and how much it tries to actively or passively make them look like that and use that as a cudgel, because it's a real leverage point that the league has. And, you know, Rob Manfred is not a fool. Like, he understands in negotiations that you need to have leverage in order to get what you want. And he's doing the bidding of the 30 owners out there.
He absolutely is. And so far, the players, for lack of a better term, have taken the bait and made this a very public discourse about what should and shouldn't be the monetary concerns. We'll see what happens this week, Jeff. Hopefully next week we won't be introducing to you as the executive vice president of suckitude in Major League Baseball. And hopefully we'll have some progress this week. Be well, be safe, my friend. Thank you.
I hope I can get that promotion. Right now I'm just like a low-level junior employee. If I can be the EVP, I'm all over it.
EVP of suckitude. Put it on a card. Let's go. All right, Jeff, thanks. We appreciate it.
The EVP of the suckometer. That's probably not what he imagined, but I also don't know, again, if Jeff Passan ever imagined he'd be reading MLB headlines as Elmo on ESPN's air, but
we are. There's probably a lot of things that have happened with Jeff Passan since he joined our fine little family of networks. He's like, huh, didn't think I'd be doing that. But I think the players have to understand that. And we can talk about it as much as we want, but when you have someone who they looked up to and see as a Hall of Famer, whether it's right or wrong is irrelevant, right? Perception is reality. And sometimes people get that confused. The players are going to wear this. And I'm not saying they should cave. I'm just saying they have to be understanding of how this is going to be perceived.
I think the players have to be quiet. I think they're allowed. I think them proceeding exactly the way they described, because I don't think Blake Snell was off base in what he said.
Not at all.
I think he just made the mistake of saying it. Yes. And as long as you're not saying this stuff out in the public, I think you'll have a lot better time going through this and not having to wear the public scorn nearly as much.
Don't take the bait, basically. Because as Jeff said there, Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, knows what he's doing by putting this stuff out there. He got the reaction he wanted. They took the bait.
The owners are, like, in every major sport, the owners always walk into this with some semblance of an advantage, because they do, as Jeff said, carry the weight of fans supporting them because they are a part of the team.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, coming up next, why is Reggie Bush now pushing for something else in college sports?
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
All right, Golic and Wingo here with you. By the way, if you're going to live by that, if you ask him, if you have the opportunity to stunt, you stunt. We should probably point something out, right, that we were just talking about?
What?
Well, I mean, what? We're all doing this in sort of a weird way. I've been in your parents' basement for, what, 2.5 months now? Is that what it feels like?
Something like 9 weeks, 10 weeks?
We're all doing this in a weird way, and as a show unit, we're all sort of scattered out all over the place for social distance. And one of our show unit members is stunting in our face right now, and it's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, one of our producers, Devin, just in the middle of our Zoom meeting, because we're like everybody else, we're communicating through Zoom before, during,
remotely,
and after the show. And Devin just walks out during the last break outside this beautiful sunrise setup outdoor. It's glowing. I think he's somewhere near a lake in Pennsylvania. It's breathtaking as we're all sitting inside trudging through paperwork here. It was honestly pretty awesome.
He basically knocked us down, stood over us and flexed, and did not receive a taunting penalty.
Yeah, no, this is the old school NFL where you're allowed to do that and just let us have it. So
thanks, Devin. I hope your day by the lake goes great.
great. I'm going to angrily read this now. Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union has a mission to put members first by making their financial goals the priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. I got through that with grace, unlike Devin, who is just outside. I'm like, I won't be surprised if Devin cracks a beer soon during the show. I would.
I think he already has, and he just hasn't shown us yet. So I'm a little upset with that. But again, he's just living your axiom. If you have the chance to stunt,
wow,
do it.
And now he's turned the video off. He's definitely going to get the beer now. See, this is all starting to come together.
We have shamed him into turning off the video so he doesn't do this anymore. But something interesting happened over the weekend, not so much from what was said, but by the person that said it. And if you want to go the clickbait way and not actually read the article, you might think one thing, but then when you actually read it, you will understand there's a larger point being made, and it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so there was a quote that circulated around. Reggie Bush did a sit-down interview with Playboy, and it was a long-ranging interview, hit a bunch of different topics. But one of the topics, actually, he brought up while being asked if he would like to go into coaching right. at any point in his career. And the quote that upcoming was, I'm, you know, talking about guidance and leadership. And he said, guidance and leadership is one thing that young athletes coming through the college system miss on so much. I missed on it. They're about to start paying college athletes. This is something that has never been experienced before, and it's going to destroy some people if their foundation is not in the right place. Reggie was talking about wanting to basically be more of a guide, a consultant in the
Correct.
World of college athletics, especially because of his experience not being a coach. He took umbrage with the headline that was used, which is that phrase, the NIL paying players will destroy some people.
Name, image, and likeness.
Yeah, yeah. Name, image, and likeness and all that. And I get it. We all get uncomfortable at times with headlines that he might perceive as clickbaity. No one did anything wrong. And again, if you read the article, the point he makes is probably one that's actually people would actually do well to heed in this.
100% correct. And look, a lot of people say, oh, well, Reggie Bush, you know, he had to forfeit his Heisman Trophy and all that kind of stuff because cash that his family. He's basically saying, if you read the article, don't be like me. I mean, what he's saying is he signed up with some people that he thought were going to represent him. And when he decided that it didn't go out the way, they went out of their way to basically destroy him. And that's how all that came out, because there were agencies that thought they were lined up to represent Reggie Bush, and it outlaid all this cash for him and his family, infamously bought that house in San Diego, or paid for that house in San Diego. I don't know if they actually bought it or rented it or whatever. And then when he spurned them and went with a bigger agency, they were the ones that threw it all out there, and that led to the title being sort of vacated and the wins and the Heisman Trophy. He's not being hypocritical. What Reggie Bush is saying is, guys, this is the kind of bleep that can go sideways in a hurry if we don't have people helping us navigate through the swamp.
And I think that's the key point, is it is a reminder that going forward, yes, this is going to come with a new set of problems. And he's right. We see this happen all the time in the professional level. We had the Broke documentary for this reason.
Yep.
If you hand people a ton of money at a time period where they're not equipped yet to handle it, of course bad things are going to happen and people are going to get taken advantage of. That means it's time to do more, not less. Like, yeah. That means it's time for the people that claim to have the best interest of these athletes at the front and foremost of their process to live up to that by making sure we're handing these people the tools to be able to handle the new things that are going to come their way and all
right.
this.
Right. And, you know, one positive, for lack of a better term, that has come out of all of this, are we going to play? Are we not going to play? What's at stake here? Something that you drove home last week perfectly, Junior, and I think it needs to be hit. People need to be hit over the head with it again and again and again and again. I don't want to hear any more issues about, I'm so concerned about players getting paid with the name, images, and likeness thing, when the entire discussion, or 95% of the discussion about whether or not we're playing college football, has been about, in one way, shape, or the other, the money. Okay? It's the money that's going to be driving this. So let's not pretend like amateurism exists.
No, it doesn't exist and it hasn't existed, but it's existed. What we have now in the system has been in this form for a long time, meaning everyone's used to the way this works, which means there are going to be growing pains. And what none of us want as part of the growing pains, we know, despite all of our best interests and best wishes, there are going to be people that, when we start doing this, when the name, image, and likeness stuff passes through and we get money going to the players for their name, image, and likeness, some people are going to get taken advantage of.
Yes.
some people it's going to go poorly for, despite all of our best intentions. That doesn't mean we stop trying to do more. Instead, what it means is we got to work overtime during this transition, making sure the most vulnerable segment of this population, of this machine that is college football, are taken care of and are educated on all this stuff. I've been crying out for years, like even going back to when I was a player, and they've started to do a better job with this. But basic financial literacy, those things that we all say in general, college should, you know, outside of business majors, you're not really getting in the ways that most people would like. I think it's especially prudent. We talk about this with Jason Fitz all the time. When he went to college on a violin scholarship, he learned things that were going to make him a good professional violin player. If you're going to college on an athletic scholarship, part of your future could be dealing with endorsements, dealing with these things that come as a product of your athletic fame. We should be teaching these people how to deal with this at an early age. All the training that you get leading up to the draft, leading up to becoming a professional, should be rolled out 3 and 4 years prior to that, so you start getting a taste and understanding for this stuff early on and have time to learn it.
Look, the only time we ever have concerns about this when it involves money being given to the players, right? We see all kinds of rules being broken by coaches and athletic departments in schools across the country, and we don't say, well, let's stop doing everything. We say, okay, we figured this out. We made a mistake here. We got to find a way to close that and make it better. Those same principles should apply to NIL, name, image, and likeness when we're going forward, because it's going to happen. So let's not raise our hands and like, well, we have to shut the whole thing down. No, we just have to figure out a better way to do it, because there's always going to be some things that go awry. That's all anybody is saying here.
Yeah. The bottom line, going back to our original point, is Reggie Bush wasn't wrong. If we sit here and just treat this like anything else, there is a very real chance it doesn't go well for some people who aren't equipped for this at this point in time. If you are really about higher learning and education and all this stuff that you claim to preach, go out here and practice it by actually making about this and educate the damn people that are a part of this.
Yeah, and just because it's going to affect somebody doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. That's like saying we shouldn't have speed limits because some people speed. It's just ridiculous. We just need to find a way to work within the system and understand there will always be parameters that you cannot cover, but you try and do your best and move forward. Coming up, one NFL team in particular is hoping a trend for the last couple of years continues, and one specific player is hoping for the same. What is that? Well, it's a tease. We'll get to it next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
It's Golic and Wingo.
Thanks, guys, man. Happy Tuesday.
Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Straight Talk Wireless doesn't play games. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month, saving you up to 50% against big carriers. No contracts, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com.
Hi, Golic and Wingo here with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. You know, there's a running joke in radio that, you know, summer is peak list season, right? You want to list stuff because there's not a lot going on except Major League Baseball at one time, and so you have to have topics to go through and take you through things. And what better way to generate controversy and talk is, well, let's rank stuff. Let's list stuff and see where things go. Well, let's be honest. In a lot of ways, we've been in list season ever since March 11th, when outside of the NFL draft and free agency, not a lot has gone on. Now, it started to come back with things coming back. We have racing, UFC. Looks like we're progressing toward the NBA, hopefully Major League Baseball, all this kind of stuff. But, you know, lists are out there. And there's one list of data that I think you should be taking a
better look at than most based on recent history.
Our ESPN FPI just came out with its rankings, and this is, listen, this is weightier than it gets credit for. There's some good juice in here, including an interesting addition to the top five that I know you're going to like as far as the FPI chances to win the Super Bowl in this one. But apparently we've been hitting this pretty well for the last few years by all accounts.
Exactly right. And you can say, oh, what do you guys know? It's just a list. Well, hold on there, Sparky. Let me explain. FPI, or Football Power Index, the last 2 years when they've come out in the preseason or right about this time or whenever they've come out, they're 2 for 2 in terms of favorites to win the Super Bowl. 2 years ago, the FPI preseason favorite to win the Super Bowl, New England Patriots. They go on to win Super Bowl 53, 13-3 over the Los Angeles Rams. Last year in 2019, when the FPI came out, guess who was favored to win the Super Bowl? That would be the Kansas City Chiefs. And they went on to win that Super Bowl, 31-20, Super Bowl 54, being down 10 points in the fourth quarter. Of course they were, like they were in every playoff game this year. So they're 2 for 2. I get it. It's not a long stretch, but we have nailed this 2 years in a row. So when you look at the favorites to win the Super Bowl, there are some interesting teams in the top five, including our defending champs, the Kansas City Chiefs, coming off at number one.
Yeah, so the Kansas City Chiefs are at number one. There are four teams.
Number one.
Oh, yeah. We're doing this again tomorrow, too, by the way.
The Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah, more Trey Rankin stuff tomorrow. Coming in second after that, the Baltimore Ravens at number two. No surprise.
Number two.
Number three, we have the New Orleans Saints checking in at 13% on the FPI.
Number five on the list.
All right, we're jumping straight down.
We got to number five.
Number five
on the list. Stay with me.
Thank you.
Stay with us. That's what we're asking.
Number four and the last team with double-digit percentage chances to make the Super Bowl are the San Francisco 49ers at 12%.
Yes.
Number four.
Now, number five, as Stephen A. mentioned, is where it does get a little spicy. Now, we've dropped all the way down to 5%. So remember, number four with the 49ers has been given a 12% chance by ESPN's FPI to make the Super Bowl. Number five drops all the way down to 5%.
Trey. Another one.
This can't be happening.
Number five.
It's the Dallas Cowboys. It's the Dallas Cowboys come in at number five. Now, let me ask you, does that shock you?
No, because
no
of the
Minnesota, no Philadelphia. Both of these teams, you know, made the playoffs last year. The Cowboys didn't. They were 8-8.
Yeah, I think Minnesota specifically, to just use that example, a lot of turnover on the defensive side of the football for them, certainly losing Stephon Diggs. Whereas the Cowboys, that offense got richer. Like, yeah. It got richer. This all assumes Dak Prescott. And this
Thank
model,
you.
I'm
There's
sure
the disclaimer.
Assumes Dak Prescott.
There's the disclaimer.
Which is obvious. But listen, knowing what they added to that offense with CeeDee Lamb and defensively now, certainly, they lost some in their own right, lost Byron Jones, who went over to Miami to become part of that highest-paid defensive backfield tandem that maybe we've ever seen.
With Xavier Howard.
I think that combination with some new blood and coaching there with Mike McCarthy, who's got Super Bowl pedigree, probably helps with the model here.
Look, we are not going to suggest in any way, shape, or form that the Cowboys had this intricate plan to sign everybody else and still have the ability to sign Dak Prescott, and this was the plan. But it's just sort of fallen to them. I'm not going to give them credit for reverse engineering this thing by signing everybody before your franchise quarterback. But for whatever reason, it has worked out. They got the Amari Cooper deal done right before free agency so they could slap the tag on Dez. And when a lot of, you could make the argument that potentially they should have gone after Ke'Lavon Chaisson with their first round pick, who was the second best pass rusher on the board, a guy that did everything, whose high school career or lack thereof was extraordinary, which led to 6 Power 5 conferences, offers to play college football before he even played a snap of varsity high school football because he's that freakish of an athlete. But when CeeDee Lamb, who was ranked 6th on their board, was just bleeping sitting there, and they take him at a position where they already had strength with Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup, and then a pick that a lot of people thought would make a lot of sense for them, Trevon Diggs, the defensive back out of Alabama, to be sitting there in the second round, that's kind of a win for them. And I think a lot of people are looking at the team that they thought had a lot of talent last year and basically not losing a lot, but adding a lot in terms of depth and the people they were able to get in the draft. There are still a lot of expectations for this Dallas Cowboys team going forward.
Worth noting, number 6 nipping right at their heels. The Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah. The East is going to be a two-horse race this year. Washington's not going to be ready on offense, and the Giants aren't going to be ready on defense at this point. But I think when you look at the Eagles, who, if they can just manage to stay healthy, we saw the Carson Wentz that we have expected in the latter half of last season when he's throwing at Greg Ward III and all these guys. That was the dude that elevated everyone around him that looked like the MVP candidate from a few years ago. So if they get that guy in a healthy team, that division is going to be a two-horse dogfight.
The other thing that was interesting here, two teams finished in the top 10 right next to each other, the Bucs and Pats. The Bucs and Pats are at 8 and 9, which means Tampa Bay is a little ahead of where Tommy B used to be in Foxborough. Bucs have are number 8 on the list on their chances, the highest chance to win the Super Bowl, and the Patriots are right behind them at 9. So for the moment, Tom has the win.
Win projections has the Bucs at 9.1, the Patriots at 8.6. Even in a division that we've said, now the Bills, a slight favorite in that division, despite being behind them in the power rankings. As far as odds to win that division, I think the Bills are just slightly ahead of the Pats in that one. But that combined, you know, that division still being one that people largely look at as easy versus the Bucs, who are going to have to go up against, as we know, the New Orleans Saints in this one, who sort of own that thing. Going to be very interesting. And what could be a resurgent Falcons team.
Yeah, and then there are some interesting odds for MVP as well. Kyler Murray is listed as 16-1. To win the MVP. That's high for me, right?
Really?
Yeah.
He fits the, like, we talk about the FPI meaning, saying we've had the last three Super Bowl winners, or the last two Super Bowl winners, last three Super Bowl appearances match with that. The last two MVPs have been first round quarterbacks going into their second seasons as starters.
Fair.
With a revamped offense, an offense that is tailored to them in the way that Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson both benefited from, that we know was the reason Kyler Murray went there, was because Cliff Kingsbury and him were thought to be this match made in heaven, that now adds a guy you could argue is the best wideout in football.
Here's where I sort of still fall short of that, because we all know what the MVP is, right? Outside of some unbelievable production outside of the position of quarterback, the MVP in this day and age in the NFL is the quarterback that had the best success or the best statistical season on a team that makes the playoffs, right? That's what it is, right? That's what it is.
Which you could lump Carson Wentz. If he didn't get hurt in 2017, that
correct.
Eagles team that went on to win the Super Bowl
correct.
Was being led by a presumptive MVP.
So I guess my question to you is, are you that all in on the Cardinals making the playoffs? Because the NFC West to me is the toughest division in football.
It is. I think they're going to make the playoffs over the Rams.
Okay.
I think in that division, we know it's going to be the Niners. We know it's going to be the Seahawks at the top, but especially in an expanded playoff, I think I'm starting to buy the Cardinals.
Yeah, that's my only holdback on the MVP thing. I have to assume that the Cardinals make the playoffs. And I'm not saying they're not going to be better, and I'm not saying the offense is going to be more explosive, but that division is really, really tough. Remember, the Rams would have been the seventh seed in the current playoff format had we had it last year.